जय पञ्चतत्त्वा जय पञ्चतत्त्वा जय पञ्चतत्त्वा जय पञ्चतत्त्वा जय नरसिंहदेव जय नरसिंहदेव जय नरसिंहदेव जय प्रह्लाद महाराज जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद नित्य गौर हरि बोल हरि बोल हरि बोल नित्य गौर हरि बोल कृष्ण पाद परमहंस परिव्रजाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शील प्रभुपाद की जय इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शील प्रभुपाद की जय ब्रह्म मध्व गौड़ी आचार्य वृंद की जय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधरा श्री वासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जय वृंदावन धाम की जय नवदीप धाम की जय मायापुर धाम की जय गंगा माई की जय यमुना माई की जय तुलसी देवी की जय भक्ति देवी की जय सामवेत गौर भक्त वृंद की जय पिता गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि वो All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter number 24, title Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. Verse 30 is on the board, but we'll read from 16 to 30.
Nate ravindaksha padopa sarpanam मृषा भवेत् सर्वसुहृत् प्रियात्मना यते तरेषां पृथक् आत्मनां सताम् अदीदृशो यद्वपुरद्भुतं हिना नते रविन्दाक्ष पदोपसर्पणम् मृषा भवेत् सर्वसुहृत् प्रियात्मना यते तरेषां पृथक् आत्मनां सताम् अदीदृशो यद् वपुरद्भुतं हिना न ते रविन्दाक्ष पदोपसर्पणम् मृषा भवेत् सर्वसुहृत् प्रियात्मना Yate taresham pritak atmanam satam. Adi drisho yad vapur adbutam hina. Vaishnavis, Risha bhavet sarva sukrit priyatmana. Na, never, te, of your lordship, Aravinda Aksha, my lord whose eyes are like the petals of a lotus, Pada Uparsarpanam, worship of the lotus feet, Mrisha, useless, Bhavet, can become Sarva Sukrit, the friend of everyone, Priya, dear to everyone, Atmana, the super soul of everyone, Yata, as Itaresham, of others, the demigods, Pritak Atmanam, living entities who have material bodies different from the soul, Satam, of those who are spiritually fixed, Adi Drisha, who have manifested yet that Vapu, body, Adbhutam, wonderful, He indeed na unto us. Translation: O my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dearmost super soul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish. Kindly repeat, O my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of lotus, the worship of demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and the dearmost super soul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The demigods like Indra, Chandra and Surya are ordinary living entities who are differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord expands Himself through the living beings, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. His personal Vishnu Tattva forms, which are all spiritual, are called Swamsa, and the living entities who are differentiated parts are called Vibhinnamsa. Some of the Vibhinnamsa forms are spiritual and some are a combination of matter and spirit. The conditioned souls in the material world are different from the external bodies made of material energy. Thus, the demigods living in the upper planetary systems and the living entities living in the lower planetary systems are of the same nature. Nonetheless, those living as human beings on this planet are sometimes attracted to worshipping the demigods in the higher planetary systems. Such worship is temporary, as the human beings on this planet have to change their bodies. Tata Dehantara Prapti. The living entities known as Indra, Chandra, Varuna and so on will also have to change their bodies in due course of time. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Antavattu Phalam Tesham Tad Bhavate Alpamedasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigod, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Kamais Tatais Tai Hrida Jnana Prapadyante Nya Devataha. Those who do not know the position of demigods are inclined to worship the demigods for some material purpose. But the result of such worship are never permanent. Consequently, here it is said, Yateta resham pritak atmanam satam padopasarpanam vrishabhavet. In other words, if one is to worship someone else, he must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then his worship will never be fruitless. Svalpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a slight attempt to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is permanent asset. Therefore, as recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tyaktva Svadharmam Charanam Bhujam Hare. One should take the worship of the lotus feet of Hari, even if this means giving up the so-called occupational duty assigned because of the particular body one has accepted. Because worship in terms of the body is temporary, it does not bear any permanent fruit. But worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives immense benefit. We will go back to verse number 16 and read from there. Verse 16, the merciful king, being moved by the pitiable words of the fish, placed the fish in a water jug and brought him to his own residence. Text 17. But in one night the fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the water of the pot. He then spoke to the king as follows. Text 18. O my dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulty. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably. Text 19. Then taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well. But within a moment, the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits. Text 20. The fish then said, "My dear king, this reservoir of water is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you." Text 21. O Maharaj Parikshit, the king took the fish from the well and threw him in a lake. But the fish then assumed a gigantic form exceeding the extent of the water. Text 22. The fish then said, "O king, I am a large aquatic and this water is not at all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in a water of a lake that will never reduce." Text 23. When thus requested, King Satyavrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water. But when that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean. Text 24. While being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to the king Satyavrata, "O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore, you should not throw me in this place." Text 25. After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of fish, the king, being bewildered, asked him, "Who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us." Text 26. "My lord, in one day you have expanded yourself for hundreds of miles, covering the water of the river and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal." Text 27. "My lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, Sri Hari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic." Text 28. "O my lord, master of creation, maintenance and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and destination of the surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you." Text 29. "All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of fish." Text 30. "O my lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and the dearmost super soul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish." So in this chapter, Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring, wanting to know about the reason why the Lord took the form of fish. And in this chapter, there are two narrations, two different situations where the Lord took the form of fish are narrated. The first one is when there was annihilation and Lord Brahma went to sleep. At that time, the Vedas were coming out from his mouth, and a demon called Hayagriva wanted to take those Vedas. And he was hiding them under ocean, and Vishnu took the form of fish and went under the ocean and retrieved the Vedas. And the other situation is to show special mercy to his very dear devotee, Maharaj Satyavrata. So there is two fish incarnations. So this pastime is happening. This is the second pastime where Maharaj Satyavrata is by river offering oblations, and a fish comes in his hand and he just tries to put the fish back in water. And the fish is telling, "I'm very small. If you're going to put me in water, there are other large aquatics. They're going to eat me, you know. So please be kind and give me protection." And because he is a king and it is his duty to protect all living entities, He takes the fish and he puts the fish in a big container and he leaves it in a, leaves the fish in his palace. And within a day's time, the fish grew big enough that even the water in the ocean was not enough to hold him. So Satyavrata was able to understand that it is Lord Vishnu who is doing some pastime. So he is asking the Lord to kindly explain what is the purpose behind his appearing as a fish. And he glorifies the Lord. So text 30, we see that he is glorifying the Lord as one possessing eyes like petals of lotus. And he says that the worship of demigods who are in bodily concept of life is fruitless and in all respects. And worship of the Lord's lotus feet is never useless. So Srila Prabhupada takes this point and expands in his purport. When Vishnu appears in this material world in his own expansions, like the 10 incarnations, they are called as Swamsa. But the living entities who are his differentiated parts, when they appear in this material world, they get covered by a material body. And then we call them the conditioned souls. And some of the conditioned souls are in lower planetary systems. And some of them are in higher planetary system, depending on the mode in which they are. So Prabhupada says that sometimes the people in lower planetary systems, like us, they worship the people in higher planetary systems, like the demigods. But they are both engrossed in the bodily concept of life. So it is, if you would compare the material world to a prison, we are all in the lower grade of prison, and the demigods are all in like first class facilities. So if a person in a lower grade, second grade prison is going to get some favors, you know, a person in a higher grade prison may have air conditioner or television or some extra nice food because he did something good, you know, so he has a little slightly better condition. So if somebody in a lower grade in prison goes and glorifies the person in the first grade prison and says, oh, you're so wonderful, you're so nice, can you please give me some of your, you know, you get ice cream weekly, can I have some of your ice cream? They may give, you know, they may give. But that does not mean that they are all special. We are all prisoners. And sometimes we in the lower planets, earth is not the lowest, but it is lower compared to heavenly planets. So sometimes we worship demigods and we get favors from demigods, but that does not mean that that's the best somebody can get. In fact, Satyavrata is pointing out that the kind of result you get from the worship of demigods is fruitless. Srila Prabhupada throughout the purport quotes Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter. Bhagavad Gita verse 19, you know, when there is a culmination which sets like the bar on the top level for who is the best kind of person. And Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate Vasudevam Sarvam Iti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. So the person who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. So that is the top level of person. So then come one step down, then in 7:21, what happens to the people who are not in knowledge? What happens to people whose intelligence is stolen? Their intelligence is stolen. Krishna says in 7:20, their intelligence is stolen by material desires. So when your intelligence is stolen, then you don't accept Vasudevam Sarvamiti. Then you go to worship the demigods. So 7:21, Krishna says that when they take shelter of demigods, I as the super soul will strengthen their faith on the demigod and then give them an opportunity to worship the demigod with steady faith. And in 7:22, Krishna says, what is the benefit of such worship? The benefit is that ultimately they will get some favors from demigods, but all those favors are given by the demigods only because Krishna sanctions them. So they do get some results for worshipping demigod, but that's only because Krishna has said, all right, they are worshipping you, you can let them have some ice cream. You know, like the warden telling him, okay, they're so desperate for some ice cream, they're nagging you, all right, you can give some, you know, I allow you to give, like that. And in 722, in 723, Krishna worships, what else they get? They get, whatever they get is limited and temporary. And then ultimately they get to also live in the planets of, because they are constantly worshipping these demigods, they end up going to the planets where the demigods live. So that is the first bar is Vasudevam Sarvamiti, the person who understands that. And then the next one is whose intelligence is stolen by material desires. And Alpa Medasham, they are not very intelligent. Meda means intelligent. Alpa Meda means small intelligence. So they have small intelligence. And then third step is Abuddhaya. You know, Buddhi means intelligence. Abuddhi means they don't have any intelligence. So who are that class of people? 724, Krishna says, Avyaktam Vyaktam Apannam Manyate Mam Abuddhaya. So no intelligent. Prabhupada uses the word unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was impersonal before and now have assumed this personality. So basically they are Mayavadis who believe that God has no form, and when he comes into this material world, he gets a material form, and then later the form will disappear and we also can become God. You know, all the people who belong to that category, who don't have any understanding of God, they are the third, Abuddhaya. So that is topmost intelligent, perfect in knowledge, Alpa Medasa, little bit knowledge, and Abuddhaya, they don't have any intelligence. And what is their destination? In 725, Krishna explains, the result is that these unintelligent people, for them, Krishna is covered by his internal potency. They will never understand who is Krishna. And Ishopanishad, verse 12 also confirms what will happen to the worshippers of demigods. They will go into the darkest of the material existence. And for impersonalists, for the Mayavadis, they will go to the darkest of the dark regions of material existence. They will go to hell actually. Both these situations of worshipping demigods for obtaining some material benefit or being a Mayavadi, both are condemned by Krishna. One may wonder what is so wrong with going to a higher planet, a demigod. You know, we are not like really, we are not like Abuddhaya, we are not so stupid, and at least we accept, you know, some authority of Krishna when we worship demigods who are his representatives in the material world. And what is so bad about it? You know, I'm still a little bit intelligent, you know, but the dangers of demigod worship is not just that you will just remain in the planets of demigod. There is a very, very beautiful verse that Rishabhadev talks about in instructions to his disciples. It is 5.5.5, and Srila Prabhupada uses this verse in his lecture in Vrindavan, India, October 27, 1976. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to the miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmakam, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. It is quite natural that whatever you do, your mind will be absorbed in that business. That is called karmatmakam. Therefore, our mind should be engaged always in Krishna. Then we can be relieved from sharira bandha, the bondage of material body. So the biggest danger of worshipping demigods, as explained in Nectar of Devotion, is that it creates a proclivity. So you are ignorant, you have avidya, you are ignorant of your position, you are ignorant that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you are servant of Krishna. So because you are ignorant of your position, then you have some desires. And the desires can be, it can be seed for pious or impious activities. So whatever it is, it doesn't mean that only bad activities, but even if your desires are to do some pious activity, it will produce a reaction. And this reaction will manifest in the future. You know, you will get some result for it in the future. Okay, that is, I'm not sure who is Krishna, so I have some desire, and because of the desire I do some action, and because of that action I'm going to get a reaction. So that looks like a chain, like a straight line, but in reality it's not a straight line, it is actually a very vicious circle. Because once you start doing an activity, you are not only going to get a reaction for it, but you are going to get what is called as a kuta, a sinful inclination, proclivity. I am a thief, so I go stealing, and as a punishment I may go to jail. But it won't stop there. The minute I am stealing, I will get an inclination, a proclivity to do that action again and again. Like you have a white canvas and you have a watercolor, blue color. So you take that blue color and you paint it. One coat, it looks light blue. One more coat becomes little bit dark. One more coat, darker and darker. So every time you do an activity which is not related to Krishna consciousness, your mind gets colored, karmatmakam. You start feeling inclination to do that activity again and again. And because of that sinful inclination, you will develop a bija, a desire to do a sinful activity. And then that desire will lead to an action. And that action will produce a reaction, and again it will create a kuta, an inclination to do sinful activity. And that will give rise to a desire and activity. So it's a vicious cycle that goes on and on. So if we get into demigod worship, we are actually getting into a very vicious cycle where we will be constantly dragged into this material existence, birth after birth, by doing repeatedly so-called pious activities. So what is the solution? If you see somebody worshipping demigods, somehow or other, we should get them to practice Krishna consciousness. The Nectar of Devotion explains the potency of performance of devotional service. It's not that you have to become very advanced in devotion. Even in your sadhana bhakti level, as soon as you start doing sadhana bhakti, there are two things a devotee experiences, kleshagni and subala. Kleshagni means the reactions of your sinful activities and the cause of your sinful activities. They both destroy. So you will destroy all your reaction, and the cause for the sinful activity is your desire. So the desire will be destroyed. And the desire comes from your proclivity, your inclination. That will be destroyed. And the inclination comes from your ignorance. That will also be destroyed. So even in the beginning stages of devotion, it is so powerful that all this, not just the sinful reaction, but the root, ignorance itself, from ignorance all the way up to reactions, everything is destroyed. So devotional service is so potent that if one performs, even in the beginning stages, one can experience kleshagni, relief from material distress and its causes. So if we somehow are in contact with people who are demigod worshippers, somehow or other, you know, recently there was this Manasi Devi Puja. It is very popular in local village. They go to worship snake god, you know, so they all take one day chuti, you know, maids or everybody, you know, they all take leave and they go home, you know, pour liters and liters of milk. God knows where the snake will live after that, but they fill up the snake mound, you know, they pour so much milk and they're worshipping. So somehow or other, if we can take that inclination they have to worship different demigods and turn it towards Krishna, then what we have done for them is we have set them in the path where all their miseries and their whole material existence will be destroyed. You know, so instead of asking them to, you know, oh, you like worshipping snake, why don't you worship Anantasesha? Why don't you just, you know, he is the lord of all snakes. You know, instead of, he is the master of Manasi, you know, instead of giving milk to Manasi, why don't you just give milk to Balaram? Balaram is, and then, oh, you have Jagannath Baladev, see, offer milk, you just take from Mahaprasadam from Jagannath, you know, so then they don't want to pour it to the snake, you know, they'll drink Balaram's Mahaprasadam. Somehow, we should get them to give up this demigod worship and move towards devotion. And like that, we will save them from this repeated cycle of birth and death. So Srila Prabhupada strongly recommends, you know, even if it means that you will give up your occupational duty, tyaktva svadharmam charanam bhujam hare, you know, you may be a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, whatever you are, even if it means you have to give up all these duties meant for these different classes, doesn't matter, just you have to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, we should be very clear there that Prabhupada is not saying give up your duty and do devotional service. He's saying even if you have to give up your duty, and sometimes we may not have to give up your duty, you know, if you have a wife or a husband who is very supportive of your devotional life, if you have children or other dependents who look upon you for their practice of devotional service, and if you give up your duty towards them, then that's basically sinful activity, you know. So Prabhupada is not saying give up your duty and do devotional service. To emphasize the importance of performing devotional service, Prabhupada says, even if it means you have to give up your duty, if it is not supporting your devotional life, you have to make sure that you are performing devotional service. Because only by performance of devotional service, the souls in this material world will be actually benefited. And if we don't perform devotional service, even if we perfect in all our duties as a mother, as a wife, as a husband, as a father, as a son, you know, daughter, even if we perfect in all our duties, the maximum one can get by doing all of that is heavenly planets. So one can easily give up that if it is stopping them from performing devotional service. And instead, they should perform charanam bhujam hare, take shelter of the lotus feet of Hari. So in conclusion, worship of demigods is fruitless, and to make it meaningful, one should always worship Krishna. And if your occupational duties are blocking you from performing pure devotional service, you can even give it up. But to give up your occupational duties whimsically, that will be sinful. At this point, I would like to stop, and if there are any questions or comments. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful lecture. I'd like to know what it means, this statement that you mentioned, that this demon, Ayagriva, is stolen the Vedas. So how is possible to steal basically sound, because Vedas are sound basically, so how is possible steal sound?
That's a really good question. How can somebody steal sound, because Vedas are sound? How can somebody steal sound? I think it's like some kind of symbolic thing. I mean, this is what is I'm thinking. I'm not. If somebody knows something else, kindly share. When somebody is stealing, it basically means that they don't allow the execution of Vedas. You know, people may have it written and you may have volumes and volumes of Vedas. You may know it by heart and so on and so forth. But if there is no execution of Vedas, that means Vedas are stolen. Veda is stolen when whatever is said in Veda is not followed. So my understanding is it's not like physically stealing and hiding. I mean, it could be like that, that he physically took the whatever the leaf, you know, where they write and keep, you know, probably he physically did that also. But somebody is demon not just because he steals a book. He's demon because he blocks the performance of Vedic activities. You know, so I am thinking that because he did that, then Vishnu came as an incarnation to... If somebody knows something more...
Hare Krishna Mataji, you said that suppose you are in a grihastha ashram and your family is conducive to your devotional service, so means you can stay there. But suppose someone is a grihastha and in a hope that in the future they will become devotees, so is it good to stay with them? Now they are not performing devotional service, but in the future, you know, with the hope that they may perform, so should someone take the risk in that case?
There's few levels I've heard in some classes that, you know, we do not give up our occupational duties like father, husband, wife, mother, son, whatever our role is in the family, in the society, we do not give it up. If the situation is favorable, you know, like you are doing devotional service, they are all doing devotional service with you, that's ideal. But you are doing devotional service, they don't do devotional service, but they don't stop you from doing it. Even like that, you should not give up. You are doing devotional service, they are very grumpy about it. You know, what is this? I made you an engineer, I thought you earn 1 lakh a month, I spent all my money educating you, now you have shikha and dhoti and, you know, sit and chant all day, what is this useless guy, you know. If they are grumpy about it, but they allow you to do devotional service, you still should not give up your occupational duty. But if they are totally against you performing devotional service, in that case, with permission from your higher authorities. Even like that, whimsically you cannot give up. With permission from your higher authorities, you should act. You know, like you go and you take instructions from them. What is best to do? They are totally against. They don't allow me to chant, or they throw away my books. They're totally against. They can be grumpy, but they may allow you to do. You know, as long as your devotional service is going on, then you should not give up whatever is your duty towards them. But if they are blocking, then even like that, you can't whimsically give up. You have to get the permission of your spiritual authorities and take guidance from them and do accordingly. There's this incident that once a Mataji was expressing her concern to her spiritual master that her husband is not allowing her to perform any kind of devotional activities. So, you know, offering nothing, you know, is totally against. So then the authority told her, you just offer the sugar and salt and keep that and just add in everything, you know, and don't give up your family or your husband or anything. So she just did that, and indirectly, without his knowledge, you know, he was drinking chai and, you know, put sugar from prasadam and, you know, put some sabji, she cooked sabji, put prasadam, salt, like that. Constantly she was feeding him prasadam, and he became a very nice devotee, and they took initiation together. So that our spiritual authorities know what is our standard, and at this standard, is it appropriate for us to, you know, when we say giving up for performance of devotional service, we talk about performance of pure devotional service. And if you look at the definition of pure devotional service, you don't have to actually give up anything for performance of pure devotional service. What is the definition of pure devotional service? It should be anukulena krishna anusilanam. It should be favorable to Krishna. So your inclination should be favorable to Krishna. Your mom or dad or your wife or your children, they cannot do anything about it. Anusilanam, you know, following the footsteps of our acharyas. And karma jnanadi anavritam, you know, we don't perform karma kanda activities, we do not engage in anything, any karma or jnana that is blocking us from devotion, we have to give up. So if you look at the definition of pure devotional service, it's actually very simple to implement it in any given situation. That is why pure devotional service can be performed from sadhana all the way to prema bhakti. Anybody can perform, because that's all you need to do. You should be favorable, it should be towards Krishna, favorably inclined, following the footsteps of previous acharyas, and free from fruitive activities and jnana, you know. So that's very, very simple to follow. So even in your sadhana bhakti level, you can follow it. So if we are looking for escaping out from our duties, we should be very, very sure that is only because our performance of pure devotional service is stopped. You know, not because they are saying something bad about us, or you know, or they are expecting something they gave you some money, some education, and they are expecting something as reciprocation, and you can't give it. Your inability to give back is translated as an obstacle for pure devotional service. We should be very conscious. Is that true, that they are blocking us from performance of pure devotional service? Or is it my inability to do my duty towards them, that I, you know, put myself under the cover of perform, they are not allowing me to perform pure devotional service, you know. So we should be very careful. That's why it's important that we ask, and it may be different for every person. For some people, they may just say, Prabhupada's dream, his Guru Maharaj came in his dream and said, you know, take sannyas, give up and take sannyas. And in this case of this Mataji, the spiritual master said, just sit in home, offer only sugar and mix it up in chai and everything, you know. So different people will have different instruction. But the decision is from the authority. But we should know that if they are favorable, if they are not favorable but they let you do, even if they are grumpy but they let you do, all these conditions, we don't have to give up our occupational duties. That's why Prabhupada says, even if you have to give up, you know, that means that's not a normal clause. Giving up is not normal condition. You know, I want to do Mangalarati, so my child is there starving, you know, then they gets up and, you know, half wash, half bathe, puts up dirty uniform form from yesterday, goes to school without breakfast and, you know, all dirty, hair full of lice. Pure devotional service, you know, you stand there in front of Radha Madhava doing what, you know. If you guide that child and take them also with you, and both of you are in the shelter of Krishna, then you have actually performed pure devotional service. Now you have put that dependent person, probably become ours towards Krishna, you know. So being a devotee is not, you know, it's a big responsibility. You know, the Vaishnavas are even above than Brahmanas. Brahmanas are leaders of society and Vaishnavas are higher than them. So big responsibility. So very careful before we take some step like giving up wife or giving up husband for performance of pure devotion. So very careful, you know. Without consultation of our spiritual authority, it is not to be done. I hope it's okay. ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय।